So welcome to another edition of the Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift, and joining me is Rafat Ali. You're at a conference right now, huh?
I am. Hey, Mark, how are you doing?
I'm good.
I am at the Ignition Conference. That the Business Insider people do every year. This is their large media conference that they're doing. So this is the second day of their conference. It's been a very good conference so far.
I thought you swore off these kinds of conferences and meetings.
I did, but what can I say? I'm back in the game. I'm going to raise money for my startup, and I'm scratching the old contacts and sort of getting them warm again.
Yeah.
And so I have to be, I hope I'm not going to be too much in circulation. Because now that I'm going to be purely in the product building phase,
right?
I have to keep my head down and actually build the product.
That's true. So, you can't just be a pundit all the time.
I can't be. No, I guess that's what we do on the show.
Exactly.
Well, we are not. We ask questions, actually.
That's true. So what's the feeling at that show? Just quickly, do you get the feeling that you're in New York, or this is like the media capital? Is there a feeling that things are getting better? That the digital awareness is really hit everywhere? I mean,
come to a very precarious time, as economy wise. I mean, the euro might be collapsing by the time we have the next show next week.
Right.
It's a very precarious time, and sort of digital, while it may exist in a vacuum in Silicon Valley, does not exist in a vacuum in New York City, or at least not to the extent that it does in Silicon Valley. So it's a very nervous time here. At the same time, big IPO successes, or at least big IPOs that have happened recently, and the next IPO that's coming, Zynga. So a lot of talk about that. Meanwhile, there are companies still getting funded left, right, and center. I mean, they're 7 or 8 announcements of fundings just this morning. So there's still a lot of money. I think people are beginning to realize that there's so many tons of MeToo products in the market, and that's what the talk here is about. And of course, I'm finally beginning to speak a little bit about my own startup. So so I'm speaking to VCs and all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like there's a little bit of a bubble out here in Silicon Valley and in San Francisco. We feel like, things are still, when you see IPOs and you see so many companies hiring, and about Facebook and all these social, local, mobile bubble that we talked about with Henry Blodgett before. And I'm guessing there's some of that in New York, but maybe a little bit more of a reality check.
A lot of it here is more media services focused, as it should be, because this is what New York is known for.
Well, let's get into our show and just talk about what's going on. It's been, we were off during Thanksgiving holiday, and now things are just starting to happen. This is always kind of a bit of a dead time in the economic world, in the media world, but we do have a few things to talk about. The first story is the crowdfunding site Spot.us merged with American Public Media's Public Insight Network, and we'll talk to the founder of Spot.us, David Cohn, as well as Joaquin Alvarado from American Public Media, to talk about the future of the crowdfunding site. Also, we'll talk a little bit about Warren Buffett had bought a newspaper, his hometown newspaper, the Omaha World Herald. So what does that mean about newspaper companies and whether they still can be viable businesses? And then finally, we'll talk a little bit about one of our favorite subjects, cord cutting, and how HBO, one of our favorite TV outlets, basically does not want to offer its content to people who have cut the cord. And also news about TV ownership and how that's declined for the first time ever. So first, let's talk about Spot.us merging with Public Insight Network. Spot.us allows people in the community to directly fund reporting. So you can basically give donations and enough money to a reporter's story idea so that they'll actually go out and report the story. Then the journalists kind of pitch stories on the site, and those stories can then run on any media outlet that wants to pick it up, and they can also pay for an exclusive of that story, and all the funders get their money back. It was funded initially by the Knight Foundation and has received some other grants. It's now going to be merged with American Public Media's Public Insight Network, which is a database of sources for stories. David Cohn is founder and director of Spot.us, a nonprofit that's pioneering community-funded reporting. And in academics, he's a lecturer at UC Berkeley's Journalism School and was a fellow at the University of Missouri's Journalism School at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And Joaquin Alvarado joined American Public Media in January 2010 as Senior Vice President for Digital Innovation. He leads strategic development of APM's public insight initiatives, as well as developing models for deepening audience engagement and widening digital reach. He previously was at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, where he led successful initiatives in broadening the reach and diversity in public media as Senior Vice President for Diversity and Innovation. Welcome, Joaquin.
Thanks for having me.
So the big news is you guys are now kind of merging SpotUs into the Public Insight Network. I guess before we get into the merger and what that means and how it works, first, Dave, just give us a little bit of background on SpotUs. You know, your idea for it, how it's worked out, and you know where it is financially.
Sure. I mean, you know, SpotUs started in 2008. It was funded by the Knight News Challenge, and you know, the original idea was really just to try and experiment, right? Can we crowdfund? You know, stories from journalists. Can we crowdfund journalism? And at the time, it seemed like an absolutely crazy idea. And it's funny now because it seems like it's an idea that is sort of understood and accepted. And you know, in those 3 years, we've done a little over 230 different projects. Some you know, small, some large, investigative projects. You know, it's been a wild ride.
And you guys, now you have grant money, and you also ask, when people fund stories, you're also asking for them to give a little bit to SpotUs. So does that help make it sustainable? I mean, how close is it to sustainability?
Yeah, I mean, so you know, we got a grant originally from the Knight Foundation, and then when people donate, they give an extra 10% to the organization. So most people give like $20, and then they actually are giving $22, two of which we keep. And then we also have a unique sponsorship model where people can take a survey from one of our fine sponsors, and then that will create credits for them that they can give to the story of their choice. So it's kind of like advertising, but they get control of the advertising budget. And SpotUs actually had money. We were actually in a position to continue ourselves for probably about a year comfortably. But that would have been comfortably at the same sort of level that we're at right now. And you know, what we really wanted to do was ramp up and see how we could grow and scale and become part of a larger organization.
So that's where, I guess, Joaquin, you guys come in at American Public Media. Tell us, you know, what your interest was in SpotUs and how you see it kind of helping in your, you know, what your goals are and what you're trying to do there.
Sure. So we're also grantees of the Knight Foundation, which has provided great support for American Public Media and Public Insight Network particularly. And we've been a fan and following the evolution of the Spot platform. Just one minor correction. We're acquiring it. It's not technically a merger. So just to make that point, we were interested on our and new on our roadmap. Now that we're working with so many newsrooms with Public Insight, that many of these newsrooms depend on freelancers in order to do the important coverage in their communities, and the Spot framework really has created a way for newsrooms to work with strong journalists who are in the freelance world. In a way that I think has provided a lot of value to the communities. And as we think about the public insight evolution, we are constantly thinking about ways that we can help the newsrooms in the network generate resources, use the source network, which is now approaching 140,000 sources, to improve and deepen their coverage. We felt like this was a very strong additional feature that would support those newsrooms and the impact that they're attempting to have in their communities.
So when you say that you acquired SpotUs, does that mean there was a payout, or how did that work exactly?
It was not a financial transaction. We didn't pay for SpotUs. We've done a lot of due diligence with David and Eric, who's his CTO. We've had our whole team sort of focused on this. So when I say acquire, I really mean that we've done a lot of thoughtful work on how we can evolve the platforms and really sort of merge and integrate a lot of the features that David and Eric have innovated around the platform. And then also going forward, broaden the reach and diversity of how Public Insight is operating in the communities that we partner with our newsrooms in, and also how our sources are connected to those newsrooms.
When you started, I mean, this was a little bit pre-Twitter, pre-Facebook, or early stages of those company era. How has your platform first evolved since then? And secondly, sort of your thinking on how to get users involved has evolved since then.
Sure. You're right. I mean, you know, a lot has changed actually since SpotUs first started. And actually, a lot of those changes have been really beneficial. I think, you know, we've seen the rise of, you know, what's called social media, which, you know, it makes it that much easier for people to share things that they're interested in. And SpotUs is really just saying, hey, do a little bit more than share, but also, you know, help make this happen. And so leveraging those has been, you know, absolutely integral and very influential actually in SpotUs. But, you know, again, we've also been what I would call a startup nonprofit, which is two strikes. And so, you know, now we're sort of just a nonprofit, right? We've become part of a larger organization, which is a nonprofit, but it really allows us to continue to not just be where we are now in social media, but try and start looking ahead, right? Like, where does it go from here?
How has the sort of crowdfunded model, what are the sort of, are there strains of the model? Just if you look across the industry, are there other models that you think are evolving that are very interesting that you want to incorporate?
Sure. The idea of crowdfunding, I think, has taken off, right? So Spot was very early, and then things like Kickstarter, you know, have really taken off. I think that in a social environment, a social media environment, communities want to contribute to improving their lives, the lives of those who they live near, local businesses. They want to create new ways to jumpstart, right, especially in tough economic times, important initiatives. And I think in an environment like public broadcasting, where trust and community support is so important, right, and where we really have developed one of the great membership communities in the country around the support for public broadcasting, we want to be very smart about recruiting the next generation of supporters that are really interested and support the mission of what we do. And when it comes to journalism, really see the value of locally driven reporting done by great journalists, right, connected to great newsrooms. So I do think that there'll be more innovation for sure. But even just to do hard work, good work around this process here with Spot and Public Insight, we're going to be working with our partners to really get this right. And I think we're going to be sharing those lessons as we go.
One of the things in public media I've noticed is that when you bring up something like crowdfunding, there's almost a wariness that, you know, there's this whole pledge drive thing that goes on in public media. And if you just have the people in the communities paying a journalist directly for their work and their reporting, you kind of remove the whole kind of pledge idea. How will it fit into the typical kind of public media funding?
Well, I don't think that it removes the pledge idea at all. I think it will be complementary. We don't have it architected yet. We're going to be iterating around ideas for that. We think that there's definitely potential there. And I think as public broadcasting has taken more of a focus on our opportunities and responsibilities with local journalism particularly, then we do want to be at the forefront of connecting communities to that work. And I would almost make the analogy to the PTA, right? I was the middle school PTA president for my kids' middle school in Oakland. We want and need parents to get engaged in local schools. Not all of them are going to come to every single bake sale, right? And because you come to a bake sale, it doesn't mean you get to tell the teacher what to teach or the principal how to run the school, but it builds a community of engagement that raises the social capital of that school and ultimately produces better results for students and those families. So in the public broadcasting context, we are constantly looking for better, smarter ways to engage communities in supporting our mission, because we think that's going to rise all boats, and not just for our audiences, but for the larger community.
And do you see this also playing into the, I know that there was an initiative with PRX, which is kind of a public radio, kind of a lot of independent reports that was building something with SpotUs. Is that something that's going to also be part of what you're doing?
Well, there were definitely. I'll let David speak to the collaboration that they did earlier. I think that was a pilot. We've certainly learned some things from that pilot, but I think the model was certainly proven out with that, right? Louisville was able to do some great reporting because of what the platform Spot represents. But David, you can say more to that.
No, I think that's absolutely right. It was a really good pilot that showed, what it would look like if a public media organization sort of took ownership of SpotUs for itself. And I think, that's really what we need to sort of think about and figure out is what are the best parts of SpotUs? What are the things that, I've learned and observed over the last 3 years, and how can that translate in a very meaningful and concrete way into the sort of larger journalism, public media, community?
And Dave, how are you going to kind of split what you're doing with SpotUs with what you're doing at Berkeley?
Sure. I mean, right now I am technically a contractor for American Public Media now, right, which owns SpotUs. And so I will be, working on SpotUs, and I don't know, I haven't asked a lawyer, but I'm pretty confident they can never legally take away the title founder of SpotUs. So, I'll always be sort of the founder, and I do feel like it's my baby, but I think it's also important to give up some control over that, right? And to sort of give it some room to grow wings. And I'll be there to try and help it and give as much advice and encouragement and everything I can do to make it grow. But it won't be the one man show that it has been for the last 3 years.
Oh my God, David, I have so much advice for you. You call me and I can talk to you for days and days.
All right, that
Never mind. Sorry. That was an
sounds
inside joke. Sorry.
That's okay. I think we get it. Well, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate you joining us.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
So Warren Buffett had bought the Omaha World Herald, his hometown newspaper, for $150 million, and also invested in some Nebraska newspapers. Is this a moment where we have to wonder about his sanity? I mean, he's talked about newspaper companies, and how they're just, losing so much money. Or is it about, maybe some newspapers are actually decent investments? I mean, what do you think about this with Buffett making a move?
It's his hometown newspaper. I think it's more to do with that, with some, of course, business sense. He will never do anything that doesn't make any business sense, but I think it's a very special scenario for him. It probably feels personal to him that he bought that. He still owns stake in Washington Post and stuff, but I mean, he's not buying to sell, he's buying to just buy.
Yeah, so you think it's almost like a vanity plate kind of thing.
I mean, I don't think he needs a vanity platform. He already has a huge platform, but I think it's more that he needed to do something for the community that he's part of. So
Almost like a philanthropy type of move in a way.
yeah, I don't think he'll say that, but yeah, probably. But I mean, if you look at if you speak to the digital first people. And they consider it a good investment if it's run the right way. And I think they're trying to prove that it can be a good investment.
Right.
But what are your thoughts in terms of like newspaper as an investment if you pare it down to the basics or completely take it in a different route?
Well, I think it just shows that it's not a monolithic thing to say, newspapers are completely screwed. They're all going to go out of business. They're all going to fail. I mean, I think that it's just varies place to place. And I think major metros are the ones that have had the most trouble, but the smaller community newspapers and some of the weeklies and some of the kind of locally owned hyper local sites, those seem to be doing pretty well. And I mean, you go to other countries like, in India and in China, there are places where newspapers are just booming. So I don't think it's a clear cut thing to say one way or the other that, newspapers are all failing. And maybe in the case of Omaha, the newspaper might be doing well. I think it's owned by, it had kind of a restricted ownership, was owned, I think, by the employees, and that made it hard for them to do a lot. And maybe, they all seem to be pretty happy with the fact that Warren Buffett now owns it. So, maybe this gives them a potential to do more things.
Yeah, I mean the fact that is the owned by the richest man in the world doesn't hurt. So, if your choice between that and a private equity firm, I think probably most people will take the former.
Yeah. And so finally, let's talk a little bit about one of our favorite subjects, which is cord cutting. We both cut the cord to cable and satellite. And, we know that, I mean, I still like to watch some of the cable shows that come out on Netflix or, however we can get it through streaming services. And now the HBO co-president Eric Kessler has come out and said, they're not going to offer any kind of package for cord cutters or anybody to get access to their iPad app, which is HBO Go, which has been super successful. And I guess the question is that going to be a winning strategy to just kind of ignore cord cutters forever? Are they going to have to come around at some point and kind of admit that, hey, there's a market here to give us something or allow us to kind of buy into it, or is that just going to kill kind of the cable model that they're dependent on?
I think that might Eric's probably famous last words that people will remember when he said that. It's funny. I, as you know, and people who've been listening to it know, I own a Roku box, and only in the last week did the HBO Go app became available on Roku, and now they're preloading it onto the deck, onto the whatever the app's deck. And so I click on it and say, wow, HBO Go, I'm going to pay for it. And I click on it and it says, oh, you need to be a subscriber. I said, well, the
To
whole point is
cable, right?
to cable, but that's why I have a Roku because I don't have cable. So it just is counterintuitive to, I can see the point. I mean, from a business case that they have and the structure that they're set up, of course, this is a difficult time for them, but I highly doubt that the cord cutters are gonna go back and resubscribe to HBO. They've cut the cord for a reason, so it's only gonna be additive, not subtractive. Well, I mean, subtractive in the sense that people, I guess, the reasoning is if they start doing that, then people will cut cable because they're only using it because they like HBO and some of the other channels. So.
For us, for the people who have cut the cord, when we want to watch something on HBO or Cinemax or any of these shows, I think, okay, yeah, we can get the DVD through Netflix or some other service. But if we can't get access to it, we're going to end up just downloading it on BitTorrent or doing it in some illegal way or gray market way. It's just it to me, it just seems like we have to learn the lesson of iTunes in the music industry, where you make it a reasonable amount, people will pay for it, pay their 99 cents or their $1.99 or whatever it is to get the episodes that they want. And I mean, I've downloaded plenty of episodes of HBO shows and cable shows onto iTunes when I'm traveling and things like that. So it's not like we're not willing to pay, but we just don't want to have to get the entire, HBO package within our cable package. I mean, that just seems like an old way of doing things.
And I haven't looked at the economics in a while, but how much does an individual user or the cable company pay to the HBO for carriage?
It's
And I
probably
wonder if
very
that's.
high. Well, you're paying an extra amount to get HBO, so it's a whole other monthly fee that you have to pay.
I'm just curious if they can say, okay, consumers, if you want to get it a la carte on your Roku or iPad, can you pay that amount? I don't know, $19, $20 a month. I don't know what it is,
Right,
$19 a month.
that's what they're not allowing us to do. They're not allowing us to get HBO without paying our cable or satellite totally.
Or they just say, this is the extra that you pay in your cable, but since you're not subscribed to cable, give us that money directly.
Yeah, well, that would be the what we want to do,
Yes.
but the thing is, they don't want to uncouple themselves because I think that would hurt whatever contracts they have right now with cable.
Yes. And so that's multi-million, billion-dollar contracts. Yes.
That's the stuck part.
Yes.
And I mean, this whole thing, you know, now the Nielsen has said that, you know, actual TV ownership has declined, which is a little surprising in that, you know, everyone, it feels like everyone has their flat screen TV, you know, everyone has HD TV and cable and everything. But, you know, now you have to wonder, are there younger people who are just saying, you know, my laptop is pretty good, my iPad looks pretty good, my computer has a flat screen that looks a lot like a TV. Do I really need to have a TV and a computer monitor? I mean, or can they just be the same?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it's going to be. It'll have to take a huge leap in technology and or design for the next big wave of TV buying to happen. And you and I and we've talked about his previous shows. If Apple TV comes, the real Apple TV comes out,
right?
That could be another Kickstarter for that industry.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the question. You know, can someone create this kind of intelligent, this real converged TV / computer that everyone's been doing and trying? And I mean, ever since what Web TV and Microsoft. Forever, there's been this idea of how do we combine them and how do we make it really work. And, you know, we think Apple has all the answers and, you know, Steve Jobs from his grave will come up with this amazing thing that he had, you know, helped create years ago. You know,
and will that spur or halt the cable subscriber numbers, or will it accelerate the decline of it? Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, you wonder whether whatever Apple does is going to be playing outside of, you know,
the cable industry.
I mean, if you think about what they did with iTunes, and I mean, a lot of that is attributed to Steve Jobs, at least in the bio, that he was so successful in getting the record, you know, the record labels to actually agree to the terms of iTunes. You know, this is going to be maybe an even bigger challenge to actually convince all these networks and all these studios to go, you know, put their hat into the ring with Apple and with their kind of competing ecosystem to the cable industry. I mean, that's going to be just a mammoth task, I would think.
And this is minus Steve Jobs.
And minus Steve Jobs, exactly. You know,
the force of nature, yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens, and maybe it's just going to be that this is the way that, you know, society and culture is going, and there are less people who want to pay what they're getting in cable and satellite, and there's a younger generation that's just more digital savvy and willing to kind of do things in a different way. I mean, that's what I think it might take.
Yes, I think that's. And so I think they have still. I mean, the cable industry still has a long window to go. It could be another 10, 15 years when the writing is completely on the wall.
Yeah, and maybe I mean they have to be the ones to really to change too. I mean, they could, you know, they could come up with a digital package, and I mean they've got Xfinity. They've been all the stuff they've been trying to do. You know, they could. Just be the ones to say, hey, let's, I mean, we don't know. There's not usually a lot of innovation coming from cable and satellite, but, you know, they could ostensibly be the ones to say, hey, we can unbundle, we can a la carte, we can allow cord cutters to get some of this content. We can figure out a way to be part of that gatekeeper.
I will let my cable company give me reliable internet, and then I'll talk about the other stuff.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. I want to thank my co-host, Rafat Ali, as well as our guests, David Cohn and Joaquin Alvarado, as well as PBS and the Knight Foundation for making this podcast possible. Don't forget to stay up on all the news, polls, and events over at PBS Media Shift at pbs.org/mediashift and our sister site, Idealab, at pbs.org/idealab. We'll catch you next week. See the haze.
one day.